Donald A. Downey, executive director of Minisoft Worldwide, is interviewed by Ed Pohl about collecting both WIP and AR. Don suggests that WIP, work in progress, that is not quickly converted to AR, accounts receivable, becomes sediment that needs to be cleared out. Where the law firm uses the accrual method of accounting, there is an economic motivation to clear it out. Where the law firm is a cash basis taxpayer, there is little motivation to do so, but the law firm merely fools itself into thinking that there is still value in the amount that isn't quickly converted into an account receivable and then paid by the client. Listen now to the full interview.
Tell me a little bit about Minisoft and what you all do there.
Well, we're a software development company. We produce an accounts receivable collections package, and we have been doing that since October of 1988. And as you can appreciate, over the years, it's diversified quite extensively. To give you a feel of our market penetration, 78% of North America's largest firms use our software, and 64% of the world's largest firms use our software. We have our core office here in Phoenix, where all the development is done, and we have an office in London and another office in Sydney. And that's essentially what we do. We build accounts receivable collection systems.
And that's all done technologically through the software. And how is it that people interact with your software? What's the role of people?
That's a very, very good question. One of the important things I always tell people, and people fall into so many traps in the software industry. They believe that you buy a piece of software and it'll solve all of your problems. And in many of the presentations, I always emphasize that software does not solve your problems. If you have a bad business practice, it just accelerates the bad business practice. That's all it does.
That's right. I mean, I wrote the book, at least for lawyers, about collecting your fee.
And I was just about to quote that. My fee, and I always stress to people that before you even load a piece of software, get your house in order first.
That's right. I mean, my emphasis is on the people, and if a client doesn't pay the bill, it seems to me it's not the client's fault. In this case, it's the lawyer's fault for allowing the client not to pay the bill.
It's exactly the case. We noticed that kind of behavior several years ago. And what I've embarked on is more of an educative, consultative type approach to integrating software into professional services firms, to the extent that we go out and look at their business practices and then consult on their business practices before we even load the software. Because otherwise it's just going to exacerbate a bad situation. And we've had tremendous success with that.
Well, let me focus just for a moment, if I may, on the software. And if you can, briefly, describe what the software does that helps the people collect the bills.
If I were to backstep a little bit, and to take from your work and some of the research I've done, people fail to pay their bills for three reasons. It's a relationship problem, it's a billing problem, or it's an economic problem. That's it. The software assists in providing the information to flush out those problems, and then the human element has to go and resolve it. So what we can do on the technological side is build an understanding of the client relationship. And an example is my firm is an insurance defense firm, and we work with adjusters. So we can teach the software that when you deal with an adjuster, you don't just go and deal with one particular issue. You deal with all of the issues at the same time, all of the various cases they're dealing with. Conversely, if I'm dealing with a contingent litigation thing, and it may be contingent for fees only, the software will work with, well, the costs are due every 30 days, but the fees are contingent, and it will acclimate to that and behave accordingly. So what the software is essentially trying to do is getting the collection people and the finance people focus on when those bills go from good child to bad child, and it's then the collector's role to go and figure out, is it a relationship issue, is it a billing issue, or is it an economic issue?
I like that phrase, good child to bad child.
it's a very fine line.
And is there a size of organization that your software is more appropriate to than to another size?
Our firms run the gamut. Our smallest firm has 12 attorneys, and our largest firm has 3,100 attorneys. and we have everything in the middle. I think it's a firm, the firm that's best suited to our software is a firm that is ready to make the commitment to run the firm like a real business. And once you get over that hurdle, then you're looking at automating processes, laborious processes that are administrative in nature, and getting to building those relationships, getting bills paid.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the accounts themselves. What all of us have heard the term WIP, or in the letters WIP. How would you describe what that means?
It's work in progress. My biography, in a previous life, I was an accountant, and I was in public practice, and then I worked in engineering firms. Work in progress in a law firm or professional services firm is essentially, I thought to put it, stuff, the accumulation of expenses that the client doesn't know about. Basically, I've started the engagement, I've done my discoveries, I've couriered some stuff. These are items that the client knows you're working on, but they really don't know the value of what you're working on. When clients know what they owe you, it's when that work in progress becomes AR. And one of the statements I always use is, there's no such thing as bad AR. It's just bad WIP that's made its way all the way through. And it's essentially the case. If you start the relationship on the bad note, you're just basically following the parade. You're the guy following the parade with the shovel. That's all you've got. So when you manage receivables, and I've done a presentation at ILSA recently, you have to look at this net investment in the client relationship. What have you got on the WIP side? What do you have in the AR side? Because those two items are the largest items on your balance sheet, and you have to work the two of them together, somewhat like a portfolio.
Well, one of the things I know a lot of lawyers have problems with is the realization rate, the rate at which they realize the collection of their accounts receivable, and as you say, taking it back even further, the WIP. So I guess we have an issue with realization of the WIP. What's been your experience of how much of the WIP actually gets realized and birthed into a full-fledged account receivable?
I would say probably in the 80 to 90% rate actually gets realized as a bill. And then on the billing side, it's essentially a crapshoot because every firm is different. And I've seen it run the gamut. I've seen up to the high 90s, and I've seen it down to the low 70s. Firms have to understand that there's that billing realization, how much of this WIP we're going to throw on the books and how much we can reasonably bill, and there's a certain, flexibility there. But once you bill it, then if the client is the ultimate determining factor whether you will get paid the full thing or not. To pull from my experience in public accounting, I remember working with one of these partners, and he said, "Don, do not dock at the time unless you know we're going to collect it." Very simple. And that's when we had what
they didn't want. Yeah, they didn't want to have a low realization on the WIP, huh?
Correct. No, we didn't want to have a low realization on the WIP. We didn't want to have a low realization on the collection side.
Well, I thought lawyers bill every month, so why is there WIP?
That's the theory. In practical nature, it doesn't happen. What you see a lot of is, we start the case and I didn't get around to bill it. And a lot of firms, some of our clients, they have policies on when things should be billed. Well, one of which I'm thinking of is the billing attorney has to bill 80% of their WIP every month. Well, I can choose a few big ones and bill those, and the bad children, I could just sort of leave them behind. And it would always be the same thing. Now, here's the problem. Currently in the marketplace, there aren't that many tools out there who will come back around and say, no, you didn't bill the 80% that you're supposed to, or you didn't bill what you're supposed to. Because the firms are so much into getting the bills out the door, doing the next case, getting the dockets in, and then trying to get the cash in the door, you're not measuring, did they actually bill what they intended to bill? And if you're looking at a huge case and a situation where, I negotiated with the client that we'll catch it all in the back end. That now says, I don't bill this huge chunk until the very tail end. And that's why you would carry all this WIP on your balance sheet until ultimately you have to collect it.
Of course, the other part of the whip is where the lawyers don't get the bills out on time. So obviously, if they haven't billed it, it's still work in process as far as the client is concerned.
That's exactly the case. I met a firm a few years ago where they had one partner who did a lot of railroad work, and he was into annual billing. Once a year, he would sit down on the whole weekend and pump out bills for his clients, ranging in the $900 to $1 million bill. And I talked to the collection guy, and he says, it would easily take a year to 18 months to collect on those bills. Because you're looking at now a bill that's 200 pages in length, and the client is saying, well, this photocopy or this courier charge that you did 8 months ago, I'm not sure about that, or this other issue. So it leaves too many questions with these infrequent billing cycles.
Well, there's another aspect to that, and that's part of the budgetary process of the client itself. Many, especially in the corporate world, have a budget, and if they don't use their budget up and go into the following annual cycle, they have hell to pay with their management in trying to justify the payment. Their cycle has come to a close, and a bill comes in the new cycle. It's to be paid from. It's to be paid for from the new budget, and of course they didn't budget for that. And so now you're causing the client a very severe problem.
I can see that. I see that part of it. I think the attorney or the billing attorney has to be much more aware of his own business and work with the client to get to some middle ground.
Yeah, I think the point you're raising is not only does the attorney have to be aware of his own business or her own business, but the attorney also must be aware of the client's business. And that's something too few lawyers pay attention to. And some clients actually say, hey, you know, I can't pay this bill. You know, it's part of the budget. You knew it, I knew it, and you didn't bill it on time. For whatever reason, you chose not to bill it. I can't pay it. Now, that's kind of an extreme position, but I do know of some large corporate clients who have taken that position.
You know, to either further that example, I remember when I was working in an engineering firm, and we were getting a lot of legal work done on patents. The law firm practice was not on monthly billing. What they did was they did quarterly or semi-annual billing. The huge bills came in, and we were a startup engineering shop. And I used to tell the firm all the time, look, I can't pay this bill. I have a choice of raw materials, payroll, or rent. And my legal bill is not high on that list. So I think attorneys have to be cognizant of their own business, but not be the bank to their client at the same time.
That's right. And I think you raise a really good point in that the more frequently you bill, the lower the bill will be, and the more likely you will be higher up on the list of priorities to be paid.
Precisely.
Let me ask you another question. We know that failure to collect the bill is a significant cost that law firms have to deal with. Are there costs associated with WIP?
That's a good question. There are tremendous costs associated with WIP, but they're not blatant. So they get mixed up in the financials, and you never see them. They are situations where I put in 5 hours on this case, but we could really only bill 4. So there's a billing realization of a decrease in billing realization of an hour of my rate of $200 an hour. Or we sent out 5 courier charges, but we could really only bill for 2 because we sent them to the wrong address. These all just get buried into this pile of WIP. And I always liken WIP as this bucket, so to speak, the bucket. And the top portion always gets built up, but there's a sediment that never goes anywhere. So what you have, essentially, is a devaluing asset on your balance sheet. This WIP is devalued because I can't bill it, because I know I'm never going to collect it, and it just sits there. And it filters its way into the P&L, because that's, you know, a hard cost, I paid for it, and it just gets hidden amongst everything. And that's a real problem.
Would you not then just eliminate that from WIP and put it as an expense or a write-off or some other category such as that?
I personally would do that because of my accounting background. I rarely seen firms do that. Many years ago, I was with a firm, and we had this motivation to just get this sediment out of there. And we just ran pre-bills or pro formas, whatever they called them back then, and just moved this sediment, and it just created an uproar because it now had to be, it now became at the forefront of every billing attorney, and they took huge hits on this stuff.
So in other words, they're just kind of misleading themselves.
It's exactly the case. Exactly the case.
Does this, in your experience with law firms, get cleaned out at the end of the year, or it just continues as sediment?
It continues as sediment. And the problem that I see with North America, I'm going to even specify this closely, U.S. law firms, is because they're cash-based operations. Cash comes in the door, we recognize it as revenue. Cash doesn't come in the door, we don't worry about it. When you look to the European Union, you look to Canada, you look to the Asia Pacific, they run either modified accrual or full accrual basis. So their motivation is to collect because they're liable for tax the moment that bill is created, regardless of what happens to it. When these accrual or semi-accrual based firms, they see that whip hit right away. Over here, the budget is to collect, you know, $72 million. I collect $72 million. That's fine. We don't see these, you know, billing realization problems. We don't see all the other problems because they're all masked in there. As long as we collect the right amount of dollars, we're all happy. We're all moving on to next year.
So, in other words, you're saying that the cash basis taxpayer, which U.S. law firms are by and large, are misleading themselves in that they're not keeping clean accounting records, but when you have an accrual accounting basis taxpayer, they are going to pay on that charge that is in the WIP anyway, because it's going to come onto the accounts receivable. They're going to, when it hits there, they're going to pay the tax on that, so they're better off writing it off and taking it as an expense and keeping their accounting statements clean.
Exactly. You've hit the nail right on the head.
Okay. Now, I know some lawyers would say, well, we don't have any costs of carrying AR because if we don't collect it this month, we'll collect it next month. What are some of the costs that they're not acknowledging in that kind of a question?
That's a great question. About a year ago, I gave a presentation to CPAs. And CPA firms run a lot like law firms. They're a group in New York. And a concept that all accountants go through when they go through school is the working average cost of capital model. And it's a theoretical model, but I brought it down into layman's terms, and I said, well, wait a minute. Your AR is costing you dollar value of money every day to carry this thing along, whether you choose to collect it or not. And it's up to you to make some kind of motivation to doing it. And we did some calculation, and the firm says, yeah, we're expecting a 9% return on our equity every year. I said, well, you know, if you've got a $3 million AR or $4 million AR, you're looking at close to $900 a day if you choose not to collect it. That's the first problem. The second problem is it doesn't get better with age. The client's not paying for a reason. If you let that reason go 30, 60, 90, 120 days, the client's going to be more upset and less likely to even want to pay you. My feeling is if the terms are net 30, get a hold of the client on 30, flush out why they're not paying. Is it a relationship, billing, economic issue? Work with that relationship, and that's going to be a long-term relationship once you solve their problem. So firms fool themselves in believing that, oh, it doesn't cost me anything. In the interim, I've paid lights, I've paid postage, I've paid salaries, I've paid rent. Those costs are coming up somewhere.
Well, Don, tell me, how is it that lawyers can improve their practices when it comes to WIP and AR? Now that we've identified the problems, now that we've identified the costs to the lawyers of not addressing the problems, how is it that they can fix the problems?
How they can best fix the problem, I think, is on a very superficial level, is on self-image. I'm a lawyer. I do good work. I deserve to get paid for it. My client wants this work done. I do very good work. And the motivation is, I've done the work for you. I should bill it regularly so I could collect it regularly. And I've done a good job. There should be no reason why you shouldn't pay me. working on the mindset that they have to get paid because of the quality of their work. They should be thinking about every minute they put on a client file, they should be collecting it. And don't put it on the file if they can't collect it. And keep the client apprised of what they're doing. Send that bill out. Flush out the reasons why the client won't pay. Build that relationship. That's all I can say. They've got to run it like a real business. If you look at the likes of Ford, General Motors, they make cars. They have no value in keeping a bunch of engines and tires and stuff piled up. Their motivation is to build it, get it to the dealers, get it out the door, collect the cash. Lawyers have to have that same mentality.
And, of course, when you talk about apprising the client, one of the best tools that I've seen is creating the budget. Creating a budget for the matter or for the litigation proceeding that's about to occur, and getting the client to buy into it, literally having the client sign off on it, goes a long way to communicating with the client and making sure not only that they realize what's involved, but they are, by signing off on it, acknowledging that this is what they want and that they have the funds to pay for that, that their principle does not become your principle. Their PLE doesn't become your PAL.
Right. To expound on that a moment, one of the things about European firms, they do that quite extensively. Our legal counsel in Europe, they will tell you all of the people who will work on a file for you, their rate and anticipated cost. So going into the relationship, we know that we have a fair good idea of what this engagement is going to cost us, who will be working on the files, and how often we will get paid. They keep us apprised of what they're doing all the time. I liken it to, whenever I go out and do presentations, I always liken it to getting your car fixed. You run it down to the local Chrysler dealership. They will tell you an estimated cost of what it's going to take to fix it, and how long it's going to take to fix it, and how they expect to get paid. I think North American lawyers have to work on that same model. They have to tell the client, this is what we propose as the best solution to your issue. These are the people who will work on it, anticipated cost, and this is how we're going to bill you for it, and this is how we expect to get paid for it. Once the client signs off on that, everyone's on the same page, per se, and we're going to all move forward.
Amen. And on that happy note, Don, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on Law Biz Blog and our podcast.
Great. Thank you very much.
Terrific.
Okay.
Thank you. That was good. That was great. So what you're primarily selling now, the software, or you're selling consulting service along with the software?
We do heavy on the consulting side and the software to make the difference.
Okay.
Now, when I started with the company 10 years ago, we just did software, and we found that people would buy software expecting the world to happen, and nothing happened. And then it was a few years after, I thought, well, let's go back and do a whole consultative thing. Let's talk to them about it. What are they doing? What are they not doing? Our group in England, they do a lot of work with PricewaterhouseCoopers, analyzing client billing behavior, analyzing WIP management, and trying to get these people back on site as to best business practice.
Mm-hmm. So that then puts you in competition, I would think, though, with PricewaterhouseCoopers and Altman Weil and Anderson and so forth, does it not?
Not really, because what we try to do is not step into their boundary. We predominantly are a software shop, and they are experts in that area. We don't profess to be experts. We just have experience from doing a lot of sites, and we always try to bring them in if the client is at a loss as to what to do. And they bring us into some situations where the client needs some kind of technology to back up whatever type of audit they've done.
You have been listening to a Law Biz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html.
Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about LawBiz Podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.